It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
It's the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. Happy Thursday to everybody out there. Appreciate you tuning in as always. Got a good episode for you today. Sit down with Sarah Todd, the beat writer for the Utah Jazz, for the Deseret News, giving us a breakdown on kind of her thoughts on the Dennis Lindsay conversation. We were able to talk to Dennis on Tuesday. The Jazz made him available, and he addressed a lot of the big issues with the team, including Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, including getting this team back together at the practice facility. What's that going to look like? He talked a little bit about what that night was like in Oklahoma City. It's the first time we've really had a Jazz executive talk about everything about this basketball team since it shut down in mid-March, and that's a couple of months ago now. So a little bit overdue, but I thought it was nice of the Jazz to make Dennis Lindsay available, and I thought he actually gave some good and frank answers. If you're liking these types of this type of media, podcast, etc., make sure to check out KSL Sports on our Facebook page. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have a rotating list of hosts. Usually it's two of us who get together for a Facebook Live, and we talk about the biggest stories in sports that are on the front page of KSLSports.com every day. So make sure you check that out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 4 o'clock. I host some of them. We've got Mitch Harper, who does our BYU coverage, Tom Hackett, of course, you know, Scott Mitchell, Alex Carey, everyone jumps on, so it's really a fun thing. Make sure and check that out on our Facebook page at KSLSports.com. Here's my conversation with Sarah Todd. So welcome in our next guest. As always, she joins me on this podcast. You can read her in the Deseret News covering the Utah Jazz, and you can find her on Twitter at NBA Sarah. It's my friend Sarah Todd. What's going on, Sarah?
Not much.
The Jazz have been making players available, and then yesterday, as we record this on a Wednesday, yesterday the Jazz made Dennis Lindsay, the Vice President of Basketball Operations, available, which I thought was a smart move. Clearly, at some point, they felt like they needed to address some of the issues with the team, kind of update the media and fans on what's going on. And of course, the big question, and the first question, was what's going on with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it feels like at this point it's sort of beating a dead horse, because Donovan and Rudy have both said that they're moving on. And that's pretty much what Dennis said. He said they've both spoken to this. We're moving on. And I think the most interesting thing that he said was, he said at the most basic level, they know that they need each other. And so with that in mind, the team doesn't seem to have any concerns about this. I don't think that anybody else should. I mean, if, like we've said many times before now, if there are lingering problems between Donovan and Rudy, then there were problems before any of this.
Yeah, and that's something that Dennis said, and that's something you and I have talked about a little bit in the past, that night it just put a microscope on the Jazz, and it amplified everything that maybe have already existed. It just made it look bigger, and it's something the Jazz, because they're winning games, you don't really care about what the relationships are between the players. But as soon as the games stop and there's an issue, that's what you focus on.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the same way with any team. If they're winning, then any problem seems insignificant. Everybody's happy when you're winning. And if you start losing, or like you said, you stop games, then that's when things kind of come to the surface. But I mean, this is such a unique situation, because it's not like they're losing. It's not like this is a normal stoppage. It's not like it's a normal offseason. Or even an off season, we don't really know what this time is that we're in. So it's unique.
I do think there's a bit of a chicken or the egg situation in the NBA, where we look at a lot of teams and say, Well, yeah, none of those players liked each other. No wonder they didn't win. And it's maybe it's the opposite. Maybe they didn't win, and then we got to learn why they all didn't like each other. You know, maybe that exists in every locker room, and then it just comes out in these teams that are discontent with losing.
Yeah, and there's plenty of teams that won, and then we learn that they didn't like each other also, but it didn't matter because they won. So, it like you said, chicken or the egg.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing that with, you know, kind of these Jordan Bulls teams where Rodman and Pippen didn't get along with Jerry Krause, and I don't know if anyone got along with Michael, but because they were winning 70 games or 60 games in championships, we just kind of glossed over it.
Yeah, and I think that's how fans are probably going to see any team that's winning. And I think the Jazz are unique in that they're not at the top of the standings. They're not winning championships, but they're not like basement dwellers anymore in the Western Conference. And so they're in that middle ground where if there's problems, they kind of get overblown. And then when they're winning, that also sometimes gets overblown. And so there, not only is it a unique situation that we're in currently with coronavirus pandemic, but the Jazz are also in a unique situation because they're not winning and they're not losing.
I know also along these lines, and a question was asked to Dennis Lindsay kind of late in his conversation, was just how do you look at what's going on with the salary cap and what the Jazz are, you know, looking at going forward? Because next summer, Rudy Gobert is going to want a Supermax contract. We assume he's going to want it. I don't think he's going to take a steep discount. He might not sign the full $250 million, but he'll sign some or want to sign some major extension, and the Jazz now have to decide, how does he fit with Donovan Mitchell? How does a $50 million contract fit in with the Jazz locker room, or what they want to do with their cap space or lack of cap space? I do think this story is not going to go away just because Dennis Lindsay has addressed it, even though I think I'm with you. It feels like they're beating a dead horse.
Yeah, it's not going to go away. I mean, especially until the contract situations are decided, or at least until we see them play games again and are able to work cohesively together. I mean, if they get back on the court and there doesn't seem to be any hostility or any problems and they're able to win, that's going to, I think, quiet things down a little bit. But it's always going to kind of be lingering because it got out there, you know?
Yeah, it's always going to exist. And those things are, even if they can move past or at least, you know, win games together, I still think that's going to be something Jazz fans are aware of and maybe should have been aware of in the first place. So Dennis Lindsay addressed that. He did talk about another thing with the team that I thought was interesting, and I'll be curious about the momentum if they can come back this year, which is the way Mike Conley was playing right as the season went into the hiatus, specifically with the bench unit. And he mentioned Conley, Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles, George Niang, and Tony Bradley. And it did look like that team had figured out what its second unit was. I think you had kind of figured out how to use Mike Conley, maybe the best you have at any point this season. And maybe I'm dumb for saying this. Maybe it's just easily disproven. But it does seem like teams' identities are really kind of often set by their sixth man or what their depth looks like. Like Golden State had their death lineup and it was awesome. But even then, it was like this ability to put Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala out there on the floor that made them so dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the playoffs, because while rotations do get shortened down to 8 or 7 players in the playoffs, usually, you have to give your stars and your starting unit some rest. They're not going to go out there and play, you know, a full game and never leave the floor. And so when in the playoffs, those minutes when those 2 or 3 guys are on the floor off the bench, those are incredibly valuable and they can make or break a team. And so it highlights the bench unit in a way that maybe the regular season doesn't. And what we were able to see from the Jazz in those last few games, like Dennis had said, was that that unit was starting to come together, and the way that they were staggering them with some of the starting players, it was looking a little bit more cohesive than it had, I mean, anywhere throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I think once you can figure out, because the reason they were building these big leads and then blowing these big leads or finding themselves in a big deficit and having to climb out of it is because they just didn't have a full 48 minutes of a rotation set, and Quinn Snyder toyed with it for a long time. And I know this is your first season covering the Jazz, but Sarah, you said you've gone back and watched past seasons. They kind of always struggled through the first 30 games of the year, and then Quinn Snyder would figure out one substitution or one move, and the team would go on this tear where they'd win 18 of 20 games. Now, it's funny, that happened this season, but it happened after Mike Conley got hurt. Now he's figured out the second rotation, which seemed to maybe re-energize this Jazz team.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is, and one of the things that Dennis mentioned was that they have spent a lot of time looking at film during this NBA suspension and looking at film, not just like of individual players or draft prospects, but the players that they already have in pairs or in groups or in units, the way that they're substituted in. And I think that's actually really valuable and really well time spent, or time well spent, because, you know, we noticed in the last few games and for some of the time that Jordan Clarkson has been here that he and Mike Conley work really well together when they're on the floor. And so getting more time with them on the floor and having more interactions between them and plays set up for them while they're in that unit together is probably going to bode well for both of them. And it bodes well for that second unit. And so the more time that the, you know, coaches and executives and everyone involved can evaluate some of those pairings, it's going to help the team when they return.
I think if there were some issues that we saw with the Jordan Clarkson lineup, it was that it became so isolation heavy that they weren't moving the ball. So when you can now put in a Mike Conley and a Joe Ingles who move the ball as well as they do, and then kind of at times pick your spots where you go to that isolation, I think this bench can actually be a really good weapon and something that the Jazz can use to win games in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're looking at Jordan Clarkson and how it can become isolation heavy and a little bit stagnant, exactly what you said, you want to put someone next to him that's really good at moving the ball. And Mike Conley is just that. And speaking of Mike Conley, if you're seeing him work really well with the team heading into the suspension hiatus, he's the only one basically on the team that's got his own court and is able to actually train in a meaningful way right now. And so it bodes well that he will come back looking just as good, probably healthier than he has in a year or more. And I think that that's good news for the Jazz as far as the team dynamic is concerned.
Yeah, if there was one player you could use during this hiatus to say, hey, we need you to get better, it would be Mike Conley, you know, or we want to see you kind of improve what you were doing. So if the Jazz could go there and rely on him and find success with Mike Conley, I think that would be a big help. And you're right, having that gym, being out there shooting, looking like he's a normal NBA player, where Donovan's shooting on a weird, you know, on just a lifetime outdoor hoop, I think that's going to be a big help for Mike Conley.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very weird for me to think about some of these players who have never gone more than a few days in their life without shooting a basketball since they were, you know, really, really young kids. And now some of them went weeks without having any hoop at all, and some of them are now on these kind of outdoor hoops. And I mean, anybody that's played on one of those knows that there's a huge difference between that or playing in any sort of regulation gym at all.
Sure.
And so I'm going to be interested to see what kind of ramp up they actually have when they decide to return to play, because I think it's going to be longer than some of us expect.
I think it's funny, and it should be happening. I know Dennis Lindsay yesterday said it probably won't happen on May 8th, which is coming up Friday, but the Jazz are going to hope to follow suit pretty soon after, which could be the 9th or the 10th or maybe Monday, the 11th. The Jazz are going to try and reopen the Zions Bank basketball campus for players. Four players at a time can come in and shoot around. You still have to maintain social distance. You can't go in and work out as a full team or practice, obviously, with only four players, and they're not even supposed to play with one another. Now, I think that's going to be hard to regulate. I think they'll try to do it. I think guys are naturally going to interact with each other and be happy to see one another. But there's a real fear that players are just going to start going back to the gyms once they open up, like public gyms. So yeah, guys want to play. Guys want to get out there. And I guess I didn't expect that to be such a major issue that I think is a little bit forcing the NBA's hand.
Yeah, and I think, rightly so. I think that the NBA is being cautious, and it's in the memo they sent out to teams when they were kind of targeting that May 8th date to open up the practice facilities, they put in, a ton of requirements and regulations about the teams. And one of the specific ones was, even if in the city where the players located that outside gyms are opening back up, that they are not allowed to go to them. And they're just wanting to be careful with any kind of infection or transmission of the virus. And they're trying to make sure that the players don't come in contact with that. I mean, and that also includes requirement. I mean, we're told 6 to 8 feet is social distancing. Well, the players have been told 12 feet because they're just trying to be overly cautious about everything. They're going to have sanitation crews that are going to come in, and they've been told how to sanitize the basketballs and the floors and all of the equipment. And they're going to be they have to be in consultation with infectious disease specialists, and they have to have temperature checks before they can come into the building at all. And so there's all of these extra precautions that are being taken. And I think that, I mean, in the conversation that we had with Joe Ingles, I think was 2 weeks ago, maybe, you know, he wants to be even overly cautious because he's got a family here and his son, yep, has, you know, decreased immune efficiency. And he, I think, would be one of the players that might be a little bit cautious and would be okay with all of the precautions that the NBA is taking. And I think that's going to be a lot more prevalent throughout the NBA than we might think. There are going to be all the players who are really wanting to get back, but there's also going to be players who are still fearful and are not totally ready to begin interacting in a full way again. And I think until we get more information and testing is wider spread, that we're going to be seeing that there are players that are ready to get back, but there's also a certain amount of players that are still concerned.
Yeah, I think there are, you know, there's going to be a lot of players, like you said, like Joe Ingles, who have family members, whether they live with their parents, which happens in the NBA because they're young people who are living in new cities. So sometimes, yeah, those first couple of years, families will move out with them. Maybe they don't want to take it back. If they have a parent that's, you know, 65 years old or older, or a grandparent, whoever it is, or they have kids, like you mentioned with Joe Ingles, that they don't want to, you know, risk your lives. And that's totally understandable. I think that's totally reasonable. But that's going to be one of the major issues for the NBA, not just when they reopen the practice facilities, but if they can get back to the season, how do you manage what to do with the families? And I think that brings up kind of the bubble scenario that we've talked about a little bit with Las Vegas. And then last week, Sarah, kind of the big story was that Disney World would be willing to hold these games, and with, what, 12 arenas or 12 courts, two kind of real broadcast-ready arenas, and all private property with, you know, hundreds or thousands of hotel rooms. I think Disney World actually probably makes the most sense of any of these kind of situations we talked about.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all of the same concerns and problems that still you would have if you were going to Vegas or anywhere else. I mean, the logistics are just so extensive. You have to figure out, I mean, it's not only the players, the families, the team personnel, staff, any media that's going to be allowed to go, if that even is allowed. All of those people would have to be quarantined and isolated in this situation. But then it's all the people who are going to staff the hotels or arenas. They would have to be part of that isolation bubble. They wouldn't, right, be allowed to, like, go home at night and then come to work the next morning. And so the logistics all of that, and how the hotels or Disney World or whoever is in charge is going to be paying those people, and how they're going to navigate, you know, having them isolated. And then if you're going to be able to convince the Players Association and all and the Board of Governors and all the owners and everyone that this is the way to go. And, you know, there's going to be, you know, TV and broadcast things that have to be negotiated and figured out for them. There's so many logistical things that even if that's the direction that the NBA chooses to go and they're able to actually make it happen, it's a long way out from happening because so many conversations have to be had.
Yeah, you're right. The infrastructure beyond the NBA has to exist there, which means the hotel staff and everyone has to be safe, and you got to test them as well. Yeah. And if you're right, if it's 6 weeks, you know, do you have people come in and work for two week shifts, or is it 8 weeks, you know, and everyone comes in for a couple of weeks and then, you know, they get to go home and don't have to work? I think those are all, you know, seriously major questions at Disney and the NBA, and who's paying these people. Those are all things that that would have to get worked out. Another thing I thought Dennis Lindsay brought up a little bit is just what Quinn Snyder's been doing through the Zoom calls and trying to get different guest speakers involved, trying to keep all the players active and engaged. Because, look, I mean, I think everyone who's listening to this right now who's working has probably been a part of a Zoom call. And if you're doing it every day, it can certainly get tedious. And you know Quinn Snyder, he likes practice. He likes making sure the guys are in touch with one another. But I'm sure he recognizes, hey, if we're going to do this constantly or every day, I've got to find a way to keep guys engaged.
Yeah, and that's a really hard ask because, I mean, as anybody else who's working from home knows, and I'm sure that you know as well, I mean, being motivated to do anything, including get on a Zoom call right now, is really hard.
Yep.
And I can't imagine that it's very easy when they have to do it every day and it's really monotonous and their whole world is sort of uncertain. I mean, for a lot of the, you know, regular population, we're kind of going along with, you know, state and local agencies and what they're saying about, or, you know, easing restrictions and returning to work and that sort of thing. But the NBA is kind of on its own plane. And so much of what they're doing, it's like, what are they practicing for when they don't know what the future holds? And so it's hard to keep them engaged.
And, you know, they had Mitt Romney come on and talk to the team, which
I can't imagine what about.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure you can try and get some guests, and Quinn Snyder has access, and the NBA has access to people that I'm sure the Jazz will try to do. But even Joe Ingles was talking about how he got the Lifetime hoop so he can kind of stay warm a little bit. He said we can at least pretend to shoot. And I honestly think he meant pretend, like lie to the coaches about practicing, because I do think there are going to be a huge portion of the population of the NBA that just is not really working that hard and treating this like the offseason. As much as everyone tries to stay engaged, sometimes it's just easier to play Call of Duty for 8 hours than it is to go work out.
Yeah, and the Donovan Mitchell and George Niang were on an Instagram live call. This was probably a couple of weeks ago now. And they were talking about kind of how hard it is to say no to food right now. And George said, you know, I'm like, well, we're not going to be practicing for at least a few weeks. And so instead of having one cookie, I'll sit here and have 3, 4, 5 cookies. And it's, you know, and if you're, they also mentioned, like, you know, you're working out and you're doing reps and it's like, I'll do another one later. I'll do it tomorrow. It's really easy to put things off when you don't know when things are going to come back. And I think especially for a lot of the young guys, it's very easy because, you know, their bodies respond faster. It's very easy for them to think like, oh, I'll get back into shape quicker. And so you're going to see a ton of that where guys are kind of slacking a little bit. And it's easier to do something like that right now when there's so little direction and so little knowledge.
Well, I think lack of knowledge is the right term there, because, I mean, you kind of get the sense of it that NBA guys, unless you're just a weirdo who just like kind of is always locked in and figures out how to do it right away, it takes 2 or 3 seasons just to kind of develop your routine of what you are as an NBA player, how hard you work or what's expected of you. So you can kind of self-motivate and find a way to do it. I think of guys like Romeo Langford in Boston. I'm like, that kid's 19 years old. Yeah. There's no way if I was a 19-year-old millionaire that I would be able to stay focused on what I have to do every day and buckle into it. And look, these people are different. That's why they made the NBA. They are wired differently. But still, I think there's going to be an enormous gap between the guys who have been doing it and understand how to stay ready, like Mike Conley, who I think is going to be, like we talked about, ready to go day one, and some of the younger players who are still just trying to figure out how to exist in the NBA, much less do it during a pandemic and have to be totally self-motivated.
Yeah, and you've got guys who are just turning 21 and they can drink all the wine and beer they want while this isn't happening. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And like you said, it's very, very easy to sit and play Call of Duty for 8 hours, and it's not as easy to get up and do a very regimented workout alone with no one telling you what you have to do.
Right. And you know what? I mean, there still has to be some creeping feeling in a lot of players that, hey, the season's probably just not going to come back this year. I'm going to play myself into shape next season or a month out from next year, which still may be delayed until December, because guys already do that. You know, a lot of NBA players come into camp out of shape and have to figure out how to get back into shape over the preseason, which is part of the reason why we have training camp. But, you know, that's going to be the case. And it is why, like you talked about, the logistics and the time it's going to take to get back to being floor ready is going to be hard to navigate for the NBA.
Yeah. And like you said, not thinking that the NBA season is actually going to continue, that's actually being punctuated a little bit today with the news that the Jazz are refunding season ticket holders for the remaining games of the 2019-2020 season. I mean, yes, there's thought that those games could still happen, whether that's in an isolation bubble scenario or whether or not they do a truncated version of the playoffs. But the fact that the team is willing to part ways with that money, it kind of signals to the players, I'm sure, that this is another little nugget that this is probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think best case scenario, if we're just trying to read the tea leaves or read between the lines, it says that if the season comes back, it's certainly not going to be played in front of fans. And I think that is kind of agreed upon, whether it's a bubble city or it sounds like Major League Baseball is going to try and come back and play in home arenas, but nobody's going to be able to go in and actually watch the games. I do think you're going to find, if the games come back, nobody's going to get to watch them other than on TV. And in that sense, I guess it makes sense to give the money back. But at the same time, you're right. That could be an indicator that, hey, the longer this goes on, just the harder it is to come back.
Yeah, I mean, because if we're talking about the amount of time logistically that it would take to set up a resumation of the season or the playoffs, so we're taking into consideration that time, the logistics of setting it up. But you have to take into consideration that these players are going to need probably at least a month to ramp up and get ready for what could be the most competitive basketball of this season or this year. And then you also, there's so much time that has to be figured out, and we're already so many weeks away from just those conversations starting or happening. And so that pushes us, I mean, probably well into August or further. And the closer that we get to the fall, then we're going to actually need to have an off season, a draft, a free agency. We have to allow for those things to happen before the next season could start. And if they're hoping to start the next season on Christmas, then we have a limited amount of time where we can make all of those things happen.
Yep. I do think the NBA wants to come back. I still think that's what Adam Silver's pushing for. Dennis Lindsay kind of indicated that as well. I think it's going to be continue to be difficult. And I think, you know, we got to be looking at July at the latest for teams to be getting back together if they want to finish the season and then start next year by Christmas.
Yeah, and if that's what we're looking at, then we're kind of creeping up on the time when we would need an announcement that that's going to happen so that teams can actually get ready.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have a city worked out like we talked about with the bubble city, whether that's Las Vegas or Orlando. Maybe you can split it between the two of them, but the less travel, certainly the better. And then, yeah, those issues have to start being worked out. I mean, I would think in the next 20 days, you know, three weeks, so you can get back together starting July 1st, I think would be the goal. And then if you can start July 1st, then maybe you could come back and get the season up and running by late July and go through August and September to finish the season. But, you know, as you're hearing it kind of creep out for baseball, and it sounds like baseball is going to happen this year, which I think is a good sign. They're targeting a July 1st, maybe 4th of July start date. They announced it a couple of days ago, or at least not announced it, but kind of really the big rumors started popping up that it's going to happen in late April, early May. I mean, that's 2 months out from opening day. It was 45 days out from when they're hoping to jumpstart training camp. So if that's the case, and that's kind of what you feel like you need, at least that much room to get ready for the season. Yeah, if you want to start July 1st, I mean, we're talking mid-May, which is next week or in the next 2 weeks, that you would have to have the NBA kind of already formulating this plan.
Yeah, and you know, part of the reason I think that the NBA is going to be a little bit more cautious is Adam Silver has said that he's not willing to kind of take on a lot of tests through a private market when there's still not widespread testing for the public. And I think that if the league is going to be waiting on that, then they are going to be waiting a while. And like they continued, the Disney CEO, Bob Iger, has said on Board of Governors call, and Dennis Lindsay repeated this again yesterday, the NBA coming back is going to be based on dates, on data and not dates. And so if they really are going to be going with that, then we might be seeing an even later resume to play.
You can find her on Twitter at NBA Sarah, reader in the Deseret News covering the Utah Jazz. My co-host partner, Sarah Todd. Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah, no problem.
There she was, Sarah Todd, giving us a breakdown on her thoughts on the Dennis Lindsay conversation. I thought it was interesting. I think she's right on with a lot of her points about returning to the season, the value of returning, and then certainly kind of what to expect from Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert going forward. I think I don't think that story has ended just because the Jazz have addressed it. Now, I don't think it's necessarily the top topic that we're going to be talking about. I mean, certainly when we're available to talk to those guys again, we will ask about it. But I think the Jazz are going to try and move forward, and then it will turn into a conversation of what to do when the season hits an off season, and then what to do coming up next year before the trade deadline if they aren't able to extend Rudy Gobert coming up this summer. Appreciate it. Stay tuned for more episodes here of the Jazz Notes podcast coming up next week. You can find us on iTunes, subscribe, like us, give us a review. Certainly helps us get our voice out to other Jazz fans, which should ideally make the podcast better. The more people listening, the better idea we have what you want to hear. So make sure you do that on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. It's your Jazz Notes podcast brought to you by KSL Sports.